Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, 5 days a week, 2 hours a day. We generally don't bring you too much news, except when Suzanne Posel turns up, which she has today. Suzanne, welcome to the program.
Hello, everyone. How are you?
I'm good. You've led me to believe that you're about to scare the bejesus out of me. Proceed.
Oh, my gosh. Well, okay. I put up a very important article about the constitutional sheriffs and everything that they're going through on my website, OccupyCorporatism.com. We need to support these people. If you're in America and you're listening, find out if your sheriff is upholding the Constitution and is a pro-Second Amendment, and support them because they need it. They are being attacked. They're having their salaries revoked or slashed. And I put up a list of all of the wonderful constitutional sheriffs and their websites and how to get a hold of them. So that's a really important article. But I put up an article today. It's entitled, How the DHS Plans to Deal with the Patriot Movement. And yesterday there was an email that I cannot confirm as fact, but I did state that in the article, that is going around alternative media that states that there was a meeting with the FBI and they are going to put constitutionalists and patriots, anti-government groups, pro-gun people, militias, everyone of the conspiracy theorists, all these people are elevated to a high importance status as far as monitoring and potential threat assessment. So I went back and looked at a document that's been highly quoted, and I quoted it too. It's a document from the DHS back in 2009, which is right-wing extremism, where they talk about, because of the recognition that the Oklahoma City bombing was an inside job, and because of the conspiracy theorists and the Patriot Movement that sprung out of that realization, they need to better monitor the movement, to infiltrate and to monitor. And one of the things that I found in that document, and I've read it before, but does this ever happen to you, Vinny, when you read something and then you come back to it a later date and you're like, oh my gosh, I didn't even see that?
I don't really read documents, so no.
Have you ever read a book?
I have, but usually I read a book once, and that's it.
Well, I was going through this document again, and I've read it before, but I noticed that toward the middle and the end of the document, it explains how they want to infiltrate the Patriot Movement, the awakened people, you know, whatever you want to call it, the conspiracy theorists, the tinfoil hat wearers, whatever you want to call it, to create a controlled opposition and to use that opposition to bring people out into the spotlight. Normally, if someone next door to you was a prepper, you wouldn't know it. They don't go around with T-shirts saying, I'm a prepper. I mean, maybe they do now, but, you know, a couple of years ago, nobody talked about these things. They didn't discuss them out in public. Now you can join social networking groups. You can go and listen to a myriad of radio stations and podcasts. And in social media, there's hundreds and hundreds of groups alone on Facebook that you can join that have like-minded people. And this is a perfect way, and it outlines in the document, and in my article, I explain it, how the purpose of alternative media is to bring these people out into the open, to recognize who they are, get them to join groups and sign up, and so they have information on, because once you put in information into a database, they know who you are. If you pay for something, they know your credit card number, they know your most recent address, and all this other data mining. So in order to find out who these people are and what their threat level is, whether they belong to a militia or not, whether they're a registered gun owner or not, whether they're a U.S. veteran or not, this is the perfect way to bring these people out from underground into the surface. And not that these people were underground per se, but just that since it wasn't something that was readily talked about a couple of years ago, and now it's readily talked about all the time, this was a great way to create the situation where they could find out as many people as they have to deal with as possible. And like I said, assess their threat level, assess their knowledge level, and keep a database of who these people are. And as people crop up and join more and more, how big the movement is becoming.
Well, and also this information that you're releasing here might also be a good way to make all those people freak out, stop supporting Patriot Radio, and stop caring about what direction the country goes, and completely, become shut-ins again.
And I understand that. And I understand that, but part of my job is sometimes to say things that may not benefit me, but it's the truth, and I think that people should know. So it is a double-edged sword, what I wrote, but I realized last night that it's something very important that people should recognize.
My perspective on this is let them watch, for everything that we do. It's kind of like a propaganda war, really, because I'm sure that there's FBI agents and things like that listening to shows like this and writing down details or whatever and surveilling everything. They're being exposed to this information too. Who knows? Maybe they'll listen to one show too many and go, you know what? I'm working for the bad guys.
That's true.
Them surveilling us is also a double-edged sword.
Yes. Yes, it is. At any time, you can come across information, and nobody really knows except for the individual what shakes them awake or turns their light on. Absolutely. And we think of these, we think of the DHS and the FBI as this one conglomerate, but it's actually made up of thousands of individuals. And these individuals, at any moment, can decide that they don't want to participate.
There must have been a number of FBI whistleblowers throughout history, aren't there, coming out and saying, well, look, guys, this organization that I was working for, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, is a bunch of criminal scum who run criminal operations, including staging false flag terrorism attacks. I'm not going to be part of it.
Yes, there are. Yes. There are, most recently in the last couple of years, they've been some IRS agents that have come out and said, look, I know that they're lying. I know that they're stealing money. And I think one of them, a woman, was imprisoned for a couple of years because of that. So there are whistleblowers, yes, of course. But the other aspect of this that I outline in the article is how they plan to have all of this work in tandem together to produce a U.S. veteran who is a lone wolf and who will commit an attack like the Oklahoma City bombing. And just recently...
A lone wolf that'll commit something like the Oklahoma City bombing, which the FBI and ATF staged.
Yes, and Eric Holder, don't forget, he magically lost a bunch of explosives, and then the Murrow building went up.
He's like, well, where did the explosives go?
I don't know. If he worked in any other job, he would have been fired. But
excuse me, dude, boss. I think I misplaced about 2,000 pounds of high explosives somewhere. I went behind the garage and smoked some weed, man, and I just plumb forgot where the hell I put all those bombs, man.
Is that your teaching song impression?
I don't know, man. I think I was just kind of making it up as I go along, man.
That's a good one. The other aspect is that a gentleman... has been identified who is part of an off-branch of the Al-Qaeda in Syria, working with the Free Syrian Army, which is the proxy army that we created so we could fight the proxy war, this fake terrorist group that we're funding with the UK. And so he's joined on, and he has TBI, a traumatic brain injury. He suffers from post-traumatic stress disorder. He has major mood swings and depressive disorders. And he's the perfect poster boy for this. And I think it's ironic that this person comes out, and whether it's real or not, who knows? You know, I'm not there in Syria. I'm not there with him fighting the proxy war, so I don't know whether or not this really exists. I know I've seen a picture. I've seen a YouTube video. I've seen details about this person. But you and I both know that it doesn't mean that the person, is the actual person that they're portraying, is committing these acts. So all of this falls in tandem with what they were writing about in 2009, almost, you know, letter for letter. So all of the whole thing is created. The whole thing is created.
Well, I was just thinking before we came on the show today, Suzanne, about the JFK assassination and 9/11. People are keeping on talking about it, right? And they're still focusing on something that happened in the past. Where I was trying to think, you know, what's an actual conclusion that we can get from these conspiracies, which are definite conspiracies, there's definite perpetrators, there's definite cover-ups, there's definite evidence, that kind of thing. Why do you keep talking about that for decades and decades? You know, we're more than a decade on from 9/11 now. How many people have gone to jail over this? None. How many government agents have even so much as had an inquiry over their names over this? None. And same with JFK. None. Nothing. Here's the point. You will never, ever, ever get the perpetrators of those two conspiracies arrested. What the point really is to have a look at how they went about it in the first place, and to be suspicious of things as they come up, new false flags, new assassinations, new conspiracies, to expose them as they happen, before they happen, just after they happen, that kind of thing. That's the point. These things show you the methodology of the New World Order conspirators, okay? It does no good to keep talking about one particular conspiracy without actually making that leap towards the methodology which is implemented all over the place, all the time. If you don't recognize that fact, you're never going to be able to prevent another one of those things from happening if you keep talking about the last one that happened in exclusive, exquisite detail for decades.
That was a thought that I had.
I could be wrong.
That's true. I agree with you. That's why situations like this new veteran who's just popped up, who's part of Al-Qaeda, we need to pay attention. Now that the story is out there and I've written on it, pay attention. See what they make of this, if they're going to create a false flag out of him, or if they're just going to use him as a decoy, or somebody else pops up too. You know, they've got contingency plans at infinitum. The hard part is figuring out what they're going to do next. The easy part is paying attention in the news and seeing what the trends are, so you can sort of guesstimate as to what they might be doing next.
You know, that would be a great website, conspiracytrends.com, where it goes through the mainstream news and then predicts possible false flag outcomes based upon these news stories and things like that and what they're going to say. And I think actually it could be combined with a betting agency as well. You know, just have a few conspiracy theorists who've got a few extra bucks or one. Okay, $10 on George Bush will be assassinated in a plane crash or something like that in 2015.
You know what the sad part about that is? People would use that to discredit anyone who posted on that site as having false information, because people in the alternative media, they wait for it to happen and then they say, oh, look, it happened. Like you said, they don't wait for it before it happens to do anything proactive. They just go ahead and confirm it after it happened.
Yeah. Maybe instead of beforeitsnews.com, we should have beforeitsaconspiracy.com or beforeitscoveredup.com.
That's a good one.
Or before the false flag gets committed on American soil and kills a whole bunch of people.com.
Yes. I wrote that article. I hope that people read it and at least take out of it what they want, you know. And it's unfortunate that it has repercussions, but when you're listening to a radio show or you're reading an article or you're you're doing anything, you should have your own personal discernment. That, again, go back and do the research yourself. And don't just blindly follow people. Especially if they tell you to follow them.
Oh, yeah.
Especially if they tell you that they're your friend and that they're the guy who's going to stick up for you. You know, that's a sales pitch.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. You know, that just makes me think of so many people now. I'm going to save you. I've got the information. I've got the documents. I've gone up against these people and such. I'm gonna make everybody free. You know, keep listening to this show, spread the word about it, and then I don't know, the people who listen to this show, all the ones that I've talked to, they're really, really bright, and they actually kind of give a frack, you know, and they're not easily manipulated, which is good because I really don't like manipulating people. I did back in the day in my old job. Never again. Never again. It's not cool, man. I think people should be given all the information, then make their own conclusions. Even if they make wrong conclusions, they should be allowed to do that too. You know, it's called freedom. Even if somebody's wrong, it's their freedom. Okay. Well, Suzanne, we've come to almost the end of the segment. Have you got anything else you'd like to skip off with in the last 45 seconds?
Yes, I've got an article coming out at about 3:30 Pacific time. It's all about this new initiative that Obama is giving grant money to all these different cities in order to build more and more of these micro apartments, these 300 square foot or 222 square foot apartments, for everyone to just cram in and be comfy and cozy right next to each other.
Like cockroaches in a roach motel. Thank you, Suzanne. Yes. Thank you, Suzanne, for bringing us the good news, the bright news, the good word, the bad word, you know, all of that kind of stuff. It's been a pleasure and an honor and whatnot. Yep, same thing's happening in Auckland, incidentally. That's what a lot of people are calling up Talk Radio and complaining about. The Super City's the worst thing to happen to Auckland ever since. We're having all these high-rise slave blocks putting up everywhere. Hello, it's what I told you would frickin' happen. it's pretty obvious once you know what the agenda is, exactly what they're going to do. And the problem is, then it comes as no surprise. And then you wind up getting all self-righteous and going, ha-ha, I told you this would happen, and now we're all screwed together. Thank you very much because you didn't listen to me. We'll be right back.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road, when along came a semi with a high-end canvas covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota. Yep. I love Johnny Cash. You know, it's great. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Buffalo, Minnesota, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Panama, you know, all of which are places that have a council building specifically for Agenda 21. Isn't that interesting? Johnny Cash, man before his time. My very special guest today is Marty Leeds from Marty Leeds 33 at YouTube. So it's youtube.com/MartyLeeds33. Are you by chance a Freemason, Marty?
I am not a Freemason, no.
Okay, we got that out of the way. Of course, if you were, you probably wouldn't tell me.
Exactly. I wouldn't tell someone like you, whoever. That's fair. Yeah, I get that question all the time. But no, I am not a Freemason. So.
Okie dokie. Well, what's with the 33 then?
The 33, actually, when I got my website going, I was 33 years old, and so it was just kind of synchronistic. It just kind of worked out that way, so.
There is quite a lot of synchronicity going on out there, I think, especially when you're doing what you're supposed to be doing.
Agreed. I've experienced quite a lot of it in the last year and a half, for sure. It's pretty much changed my life working with those materials, so.
Well, there's a whole bunch of journalist questions like who, what, when, where, why, and how that we want to ask you. So, sure. Firstly, we'll ask you is the who, and that would be who are you?
Okay. Yeah, I am Marty Leeds, MartyLeeds33.com. I've got three books for sale, one that just came out yesterday. First one's Pi, The Great Work. And then I have two, Pi in the English Alphabet, Volume 1, and then Volume 2 was just released yesterday. I also have a, I have an active YouTube site. I'm a teacher at the School of the Holy Science.org. And then I just released a Gematria calculator for the phone. It's an Android phone app that you can check out for like $3 on Google Play. And we can get into that a little bit. That's kind of what my books are about. Kabbalah, numerology, that sort of thing. And then I'm also going to be speaking at 3-Year Mind Conference, in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. It's April 25th, 26th, 27th. You can go to freeyourmindconference.com and check that out. A lot of great speakers are going to be there. We got Randall Carlson, Larkin Rose is going to be there. Mark Passio is going to be there. So look forward to that. So check that out. You can get advanced tickets right now. So.
Yep, and we're advertising the Free Your Mind conference on the commercial breaks at AmericanFreedomRadio.com, and our very special host, Freighter X, is one of the people organizing that, and hopefully he'll get his book finished soon as well, so we can be able to figure out the secret war inside Freemasonry and all of this kind of stuff. It'd be fantastic. Mm-hmm. Now, what is it that you actually got you into all of this? Because you're to do with numbers and pi and these secret sort of, it seems like a cult mysticism tied into numerology and such like that. Is that about right?
Yeah, really what it is, at least in the opinion of this author, is it's a science. It's a straight up mystical science that's been basically kind of occulted or put underground throughout the years, whatever, for whatever reason, conspiratorial, you know, you could point to a lot of different things. But really that this this fundamental science is the science that's been shared by, you know, the major civilizations throughout the years, like the Greeks, and this is what the alchemists were talking about. This is what's going on in Freemasonry. You want to look at the Priory of Sion. All of these sorts of underground secret societies were basically veiling this deep science, a holy science, a mystical science. And it's really a science that's more profound than what we're doing right now. A lot of the science that's going on right now is a very mechanical, very like reductionist, corporeal science. They look at the world as kind of like this artifact.
What does the word corporeal mean?
Like materiality, like very Newtonian. We basically, modern science looks like, I mean, they look at the world as if it's constructed as like a radio. Like you could go in and take the pieces apart, you know. And really what this science is that's focused on numbers is the recognition that numbers are a cosmological language. It's the language of the universe. And this is what these ancient people knew, and that there's key canonical numbers that you can focus on that can actually point to various phenomena and processes to that we can understand through the number. And basically, that's what my books are about, and that I actually kind of take this philosophy into the English alphabet in and of itself. And we can actually break that down and find a mathematical structure behind the English alphabet that really points to the connectivity and interweaving of just a lot of different, quote-unquote, disparate events, processes that in nature, and you can pull them together through the number. And this is what I'm basically trying to do. So that's what I'm looking at in my books. And I want to say too, I just had an article go up on worldmysteries.com. I did about 3 or 4 articles on there right now too. And so I'm breaking down a lot of this material. So a lot of this stuff, you don't even have to buy the book. You can actually go online and check this stuff out for free. So, and then if you're interested, you can give me your money.
Yeah, and when did all this start for you, and also when was this numerical language first discovered way back in the day, I assume?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. I mean, for me, it started probably within the last like 3 years, and then really kind of reached a fever pitch in the last year and a half, where I really focused on it, really, and then started writing the books. As far as like when this was discovered in history, we really have no idea. It's obviously survived from prehistory, and we don't really even know how far back conscious, intelligent human beings go. You know, basically the anatomical or physiological record of, I mean, human beings as they are right now are about 150,000 years old. And we don't really even know what the consciousness of beings before that were, and if they were numerical at all. I mean, if they knew number, if they knew mathematics, geometry, did they understand architecture, astronomy, that sort of thing. So as far as our relationship with numbers, it goes way back. And I don't really think you can point to any point in history to say this is exactly where it, you know, showed up, the origin. So
theoretically, could it have been eternal? Like it's always been there and always will be?
Yeah, that's what they are. That's what numbers are. They're basically, it is the language, you know, like Galileo even said that mathematics is the language which God wrote the universe in. And it's basically the idea that before human beings ever even showed up, number was working at work in creation. So it's not a creation. Number is not a creation from mankind. Conversely, numbers created mankind. And that's why we get numbers right from our hands. I mean, the word digit comes from the word finger. I think it's a Greek term, I want to say. But so really, we learn to count. We learn how to manipulate number. We learn how to work with nature through number. This is what science says. This is what the numerologists and mystics of old did. And we can see that that's right on our hands. We learned it from ourselves. And so this is what I focus on. And then I actually go and concentrate on the base 10 system, how that can correlate to all the other systems. So basically, a lot of questions I've got is, because I focus on a base 10 system, if an alien species came down and had 16 fingers instead of 10, well, what would that say about the mathematics of the universe? What's important that people need to know is that the base 10 system is extremely important, because from the base 10 system, you can look at any other system. You can convert a base 10 system into a base 7 system or a base 16 system. It doesn't matter. And this is what's being said in the the Sefer Yetzirah, when they talk about the 10 emanations of God. They said not 9, not 11. They said 10 emanations. And this is what's important, is because these mystics are trying to pass on this information about how important number is. It's a language.
Who were those people again? The Sefer Nefer? What?
Oh, the Sefer Yetzirah is an ancient, like, Jewish, basically Kabbalistic book. It's a very ancient, like, mystical document that I haven't even read in its entirety. But basically what they talk about is, you know about the Kabbalistic tree of life, the Jewish tree of life. You've probably heard about this.
In vague references, but I don't know the full story, no.
Yeah, you know, that's what's actually compelled me to write a lot of these books, because a lot of the stuff that has been, it's been deep, rich historical context with a lot of this material, and a lot of people don't know it. And so basically what I was trying to do was, with these books, write field guides, if you will, very short, concise, highly illustrated books about going into esoterica, mysticism, the occult, and having these as guidebooks, field guides. It with number as your backing. And so being able to look at all of these ancient myths, rituals, mythology, you know, religions, spiritualities, all of this stuff, and realize and look at the numbers from them. Because basically my whole shtick, if you will, is that our ancient mythologies and rituals and stuff like that are basically riddles, and they're mathematical riddles, and they're encoding mathematics. And this goes deep into even the names and the very words that we're using, that we're speaking right now, that there's mathematical information encoded in them, and that the math actually comes first. And this is how we can actually understand languages, spiritualities, books like the Zohar, the Holy Bible, the Quran. We have to understand them numerically first, because it's in my opinion that this is how they were written. So.
So they basically, it's kind of like a coding, if you've ever seen those old detective movies or something like that, like every third letter means something or whatever, and then it winds up saying, I'm completely screwed and I'm trapped under a bridge, help me, and it's like something that was written 7,000 years ago or whatever, and then they go to that bridge and sure enough, there was a dead guy under there.
That's actually exactly it. I mean, basically, when you look at a book like the Holy Bible, the problem with our approach to the Holy Bible right now is a lot of people speak on behalf of it, and they don't even know what they're really looking at. Basically, what the Holy Bible is a very ancient, mystical document, and you're supposed to read it in through a mystical way. So when the problem with main religions, most religions now, is not really fundamentalism, it's literalism. They look at a book like the Holy Bible and they read it literally, as if they're reading like a Dan Brown novel or something like that. You flip the page, you flip the next one, here's the story, this is what happened, end of story. quite the contrary. It's completely, you're supposed to read it in this Kabbalistic fashion, which means you're supposed to read the story and there's layer upon layer upon layer. And when you're reading the story, you're not reading just left to right, reading, you know, sentence after sentence. What you're looking at the symbol, you're looking at the letter, you're looking at the numbers attached to them. And this is Kabbalah. This is gematria. And this is how these books were written. So if you're not reading it in this context, you're not even reading the book. And so really, this is a big statement to make, because
hold on.
Sorry. Yeah.
It's a language within a language. And the thing about words is words have meanings. And if you've got numbers encoded into certain letters or certain words and things of that nature, then the word has more meanings than we give it credit for or analyze in the first place, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I don't think we even understand the power of some of the words that we use. And we could go into the cipher a little bit and give people a little bit of context of really how deep and rich this is. And you know, I don't know if you want to do that, and I don't know how much time we have to break or anything like that, but it takes about 10 minutes probably to discuss. So we could do that if you'd like.
Okay, we'll probably leave that to the first segment of the second hour. We've only got about 3 minutes now, and then the next segment's like exactly 10 minutes, so I think it'd be difficult to squeeze it in there. Because I also wanted to get into the point that I don't quite understand this numeric language or the references to pi and all of these other things, and I wanted to sort of get you to explain what all these things actually mean and the point where I can actually understand them before we go into it, because I've watched a couple of your videos before coming on the show today, and it was just like numbers equal numbers, and this means that, and that means this, and so on and so forth, and I didn't understand the context or exactly how they mean what they mean or why they mean what they mean or when they started that, or, you know, I've had another guy on the show explain this before, and I'm still not getting it. Essentially, like it's still kind of confusing. I imagine that happens a lot.
Yeah, I mean, really, the problem is a lot of people are not numerically literate, and I wasn't myself. I mean, this was a process for me and a thing that I had to undergo and learn, you know, from the ground up. So, this is one of the things that I want to address, is that most people are numerically illiterate, you know, basically because of the school system. I mean, the curriculum that we were taught. I mean, I've talked to people all around the world, New Zealand now, Ireland, Europe, all over the States, and 100% of the time, they've told me, God, I hate math. I want nothing to do with it. I cringe, you know, and you get that consistently. And then it's like one of those, you know, things that make you go, why is that? Why does everybody hate math? And then you look to our school system and you realize that it's because we were taught math in an absolutely horrible way. And, you know, I like to make the point that I'm a college dropout. I'm an autodidact. I learn everything on my own. When I was in college, I took an algebra course and I got a C in it. And yet here I am writing a book on pi. And then so it makes you wonder, why was I not into mathematics back then? It was because I wasn't intelligent or I wasn't interested? No, not at all. It's because the way that we're taught math is it's just confounded and ugly. And that's the problem. So,
well, that's a very profound thing that I was thinking just before this as well. The reason why I don't quite understand this as yet is because the right teacher hasn't taught it in the right way yet for me to fully understand it. And I've had this experience myself where people will try to explain things to me, and before explaining it to them, they've said, you probably just won't get it. And my argument is, look, man, if you're explaining something and people don't get it, it's not necessarily because you're not smart enough to get it. It's that they're not smart enough to fully understand it and explain it to somebody of any intelligence level.
Agreed. Yeah.
All right. Well, here we are with the break. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, with Marty Leeds from MartyLeeds33.com. You can also look up Marty Leeds 33 on YouTube. Back in just a few minutes, folks.
Bonkers.
Everything is a daydream. Everything in my
underneath. I act real shallow, but I'm in too deep. I know I care about insects and violence. A heavy baseline is my kind of silence. Everybody says that I gotta get a grip, but I let sanity give me the slip.
Bonkers.
Some people think I'm bonkers, but I just think I'm free. And I'm just living my life, there's nothing crazy about me.
Welcome
some
back.
People pay for thrills.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. My very special guest is Marty Leeds, MartyLeeds33.com. You can also search up for his YouTube channel, MartyLeeds33, right there at youtube.com/MartyLeeds33. Now, we were talking just before the break about how if you aren't capable of understanding something, it's not because you're stupid or anything. It's because the person who's trying to teach it to you is stupid and they don't know how to interpret it for you or teach it to you, that kind of thing. But to a large extent anyway, some people are just really, really dumb. I'd be pretty dumb if I denied that. but in a lot of cases, you know, people who are reasonably intelligent who just don't quite get it, it's the result of the fact that the person who's trying to teach it is not quite as smart as they are and doesn't know how to teach them. Well, anyway, yeah. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, I mean, honestly, I don't really think people are dumb. I think people have the capacity to be very intelligent human beings. I think the problem that we have is basically how we're taught. I mean, I think really the school system, the curriculum that I've gone through and that I know most of the people that I've spoken to have gone through keeps you kind of like infantile, you know, kind of like a child. It's just, and so therefore when you get out of your schooling, whatever it is, even college, it's like the state is there to take care of you, you know? And this is the problem. And so we look and we're like, look at those stupid people. I don't really think people are stupid though. I just think that, you know, they have the capacity. Everyone has the capacity to be extremely intelligent. The problem is how we're taught, you know, and I like to make the point. We're taught what to think and not how to think, you know? And that's what I'm trying to do with mathematics is basically teach people how to look at mathematics, especially coming from, I come from a unique perspective because I kind of come from the side door, you know, I had no formal education. I have, you know, nobody backing me or anything like that. So, you know, so for me, it's just very important to try to teach this stuff and lay it out because for me, being numerically literate is extremely important. It's completely changed my life. And it's helped me understand so many of these ancient mysteries and has allowed me to sort of crack some of them. And we can go into some of the ones that I've, you know, expressed in the books and in the videos, but whatnot. But yeah, in closing, I guess, I don't really think people are stupid. I just think people need to be taught the right way and the right way to think. And that's one of the biggest problems we have in our society now, I would say.
Yeah. In other words, people aren't dumb. They've just been dumbed down deliberately.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I noticed when I went to university, it was just like, what value does this information have? You know, that was what it was occurring to me. Every single class, you know, I did Japanese, communication studies, film and media, sociology, and a whole raft of other topics. Business, psychology, none of it actually meant anything to me. And I was like, what the hell is the point of all of this? You know, they're teaching me all bunch of stuff. And it's like, great, information. Is there any practical use to it? No, apart from some douchebag, an intellectual flambé type conversation that doesn't amount to anything that you only really have after the course of a few beers and maybe a few joints. That's about it. And this is what university really embodied for me, is it's not teaching people how to think critically. It's actually teaching them how to be critical of people who can still think despite going to university.
Yeah, that's well said. I mean, it's amazing to me how many people I know that graduated, you know, they went to 4 or 5 years of college, spent thousands of dollars to go there, and then they get out and they don't continue their education at all. They're not avid readers. You know what I mean? I'm like, you spent $100,000 to go to college and you got out and the one thing you didn't learn was that you should continue to read the rest of your life. Like that's insane to me. You know, I mean, the whole point of going to, the whole point of going to a higher level of education is to be scholarly the rest of your life. And that really means to use your brain the rest of your life. And it's really sad. I mean, I know many people that went to college and basically shut off after that. You know what I mean? Their consciousness kind of just went. Yeah. I mean,
you know, it's like, is this what higher learning is about? I'm not keen anymore, you know, and I've already lost so much money and wasted so much of my time and gotten myself into so much debt only to become unemployed because nobody employs anybody with a university education because employers know that university educated people can't freaking think or freaking work. Oh my God. It's so sad, man. I mean, it's not to disparage everybody or anything. I'm just talking about one general trend. And there's other people in there, you know. Like, what I love is that the universities, they say, what was it? If you take a university, you're more likely to earn $1 million more in your lifetime than other people or whatever. Well, what they've done is they've taken, you know, say 100 billionaires or whatever, and just said these 100 billionaires made $1 billion more money than the extra person. So let's just divide that up amongst all the rest of the university educated people who are currently unemployed on food stamps and just say that you make an extra $1 million over the course of your life. You know, that seems to work, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's amazing what you could do with stats. It's just like, you can manipulate them any way you want to, you know, make your point. So
yeah. Lies, damned lies and statistics.
Yeah. I mean, I remember when I was graduating high school and then going into college, the pressure to do that was so enormous. Because it's like, well, what are you going to do? You're going to be a loser? What are you going to be a loser the rest of your life? You're just going to go and work some regular job or whatever? And it's like, wow, that was like, psychologically, that was very tough to deal with, especially in that time, in my formative years when I'm trying to figure out what the hell it is I'm doing with my life, who I am, where am I going, where do I fit in, what am I interested in? The like having that sort of that pressure put on you is a very difficult thing at that time in your life. And you know, looking back now, it's just like, I mean, college did nothing for me. I mean, it really didn't. The only thing that college taught me was that I didn't want to go to college, you know, so.
Yeah, concentration camps taught people similar lessons.
An extreme analogy, but fitting.
Yeah. I mean, in a concentration camp, they're there to kill you. In a university camp, they're there to kill your mind. And I don't know, I had this conclusion that the most educated people out there become the dumbest. In a lot of ways, because they refuse to listen to things, they refuse to look at things. In my opinion, ignorance is not stupidity; willful ignorance is.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, basically, when you look at most people, what they do is they formulate a belief system. However, that is formulated. Is it religion? Is it college? Is it science? They form that belief system, and then they perpetuate that for their entire lives. And that's what they want to do. And if you try to deviate from that at all, or try to, you know, I mean, you've probably had this experience where you've spoken to somebody about chemtrails and they just turn off. They want nothing to do with it because it's like they establish a belief system and they go with that the rest of their life without ever questioning it. And this is basically what all of these organizations and institutions do. I mean, they're mind control. And we, you know, even government, when you look at the word government, ment, it comes from, I think it's Latin, mentis, and it means mental, it means mind, it means and mentality, mentation, mentor. So what is the government there to do in the word itself? It's there to govern your mind. That's what the word's telling you it's doing. So, you know,
And the word govern stems from control, I think. That's kind of like one of its translations in the Latin, I believe. So the word government literally means mind control.
Yeah, and I mean, and this really, and that whole idea stems to, it goes to college, it goes to your job. You know, you got to fall in line, you got to wear the uniform, you have to have uniform, one form, you have to do this, you have to think this way. And so college, educated, higher learning people are not really higher learned at all. They're not advanced in their education at all. What they're advanced in is a belief system that they're perpetuating. That's all they're advanced in, you know. And I can say this very, you know, modern science and the way that they do science is really shows this. I mean, it's basically they do not want to deviate at all from what they believe. They've got the story. They're correct. They just got to dot a few I's and cross a few T's, and that's it. And I think they're dead wrong, you know. And I don't know if you just heard that TED Talks actually just took down Rupert Sheldrake's and Graham Hancock's. They did a thing in Europe for a TED Talks, and they took it down because basically Rupert Sheldrake was questioning the tenets of science. And science is supposed to be open-minded enough to like lay it all on the table, look at everything, and we'll, you know, and keep an open mind and, you know, that sort of thing. And basically, you know, we're being controlled. We're being taught, you know, what to think. And this is an enormous problem. So my goal in the mathematics aspect of this is just to put a new perspective on it and say there's no way that, at least the things that, you know, I've kind of written about, is this cannot be, you have to consider it. You cannot just not, you can't just blow it off. Because if you are, then you're not being scientific. So, you know, it's just my position. So,
well, I think whatever realizations that people come up with, if it's philosophical, statistical, political, the more you ignore information coming in, even if the information's wrong, if you don't even listen to it, how are you actually going to know whether or not it's wrong? More to the point, if it's coming in and it's correct and you instantly dismiss it, then you have become the one who was wrong, who doesn't know what they're talking about. And I believe that this is the real problem society has in and above and over everything else, is that we're not prepared to entertain the possibility that we don't know what we're talking about. We're not prepared to entertain the possibility that the person in front of us saying all this crazy stuff is actually the sane one and we're the crazy person. We'll be right back after the break. At thevinnieeastwoodshow.com, Marty Leeds is my very special guest for the next hour as well. And you can check him out at martyleeds33.com. And archives to this show and others are at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Back in just a few minutes, folks. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chains nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. It's not only fluoridated, it's also Fukushima irradiated, which is incidentally pretty good for the economy because everybody got a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb. My very special guest is Marty Leeds from MartyLeeds33.com, also at YouTube.com/MartyLeeds33. There's an awful lot of 33s. I see the number and hear the number 33 all the time. All the time. And I think it's because I'm looking for it, you know. Anyway, Marty, welcome back. Now, you had some kind of a 10-minute presentation or explanation mix thingy that you wanted to get out of the way, and here's the time to do it. There's the longest segment that we've got.
Okay, cool. Yeah, let's actually just talk about the cipher so people have sort of context of what we're talking about here. Basically, what I've done is find a mathematical structure for the English alphabet. And what this does is actually utilizes the phalanges of your hands. And so what we can do is actually take the 26 letters of the English alphabet and place them on your hands, with A being your thumb, left thumb, and Z being your other thumb. And then you have the 24 phalanges between those on your fingers being B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, P, Q, R, S, T, U, V, W, X, Y, Z. Being your other
Can
thumb.
You define phalange? Because I know what a flan is, it's some kind of dessert. And I know what a D is, it's some kind of gangster.
But I don't think a phalange is. Right there. Yeah. These are your little sections of your fingers here, the phalanges. So basically, when we get the word digit, where we derive the word number is from your finger. And so it's very important to actually look at the mathematics of your hand. And so when you look at the mathematics of your hand, you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, and 14. So basically what you can do is go A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M. And then, right, of course, so, you'd be...
So a phalange is just basically each and every single little knuckle bone of your fingers there.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. And then, so basically what we're doing right now is we're splitting the alphabet A through M and M through Z. So once again, we have A on our thumb and then Z on our other thumb. And so basically what we can do is A through M on our left hand and then N through Z on our right hand. Now, what we can do is actually use the motif that we see in the 7 days of creation in the Bible, in Genesis. So basically 6 days where God did work, and then he rested on the seventh or the Sabbath. And of course, seven is always this very holy number. It's a very consistent number. We have seven chakras, 7 days of the week, seven colors of a rainbow, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. This number is seen time and time again.
Did you ever play that game, that board game, The Game of Life, where you spin a wheel in the middle and sometimes, you know, you draw a card and it says what your lucky number is? I drew it like years and years ago when I was a kid, and my lucky number was seven as well. And it's been my lucky number to this day.
Oh, well, that's cool. No, I don't know if I played that game, but seven is a very important number. And it's basically, this whole system is based on a septenary system, or a system of seven. And so basically what you do is you go, we're going to split our alphabet A through M and M through Z. So 13 letters per side, putting them on our hands. Now we can just walk up. A, B, C, D, E, F is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And now we're going to rest on the G. And this is the letter that's inside the Freemasonic square and compasses. We're resting on that G. That G becomes seven. Now all we're going to do is actually basically just use symmetry, just like you see on your hands, and we're going to walk back down. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. So you have A, B, C, D, E, F, G being 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and then H, I, J, K, L, M being 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And so we put that on our hands. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. A through M on your left hand. Because your left hand is nothing more than a mirror of your right hand, it's symmetry. You can just take those numbers and place them right onto your other hand. And so now you literally have the English alphabet onto your hands with this septenary system. Now, why this is important is because the G inside the Freemasonic compasses and square is this key number, because it's telling you about the number seven and how important it is. What these two things is, it's a compass and a square. And what this is referring to is an ancient mathematical art called squaring the circle. And this is exactly what the Great Pyramid of Giza does. This is what the Great Pyramid of Giza does straight up. And what this does is it's ancient mathematical art that allows you to map the cosmos very well. What we can do is find the radius or the radii of the combined radii of the Earth and the Moon with using this. Now, and this number is 5,040 miles. So the radius of the Moon is 1,080. The radius of the Earth is 3,960. Combined, 5,040. 1 times 2 times 3 times 4 times 5 times 6 times 7 is 5,040. So this ancient mathematical art that's in the Great Pyramid of Giza was used to construct the English alphabet. So this is very important. And so now you can actually look at words using this cipher, and it's just truly remarkable all the things that you can do with this. And one of the ones I've broken down is the name Jesus Christ. And I don't know how much time we have. We can kind of talk about this a little bit. Jesus Christ is known as the sun god, or the son of God. And the sun god motif is seen all over. Like, we see it in, you know, it's in Freemasonry, it's in Egypt, it's in the Greeks. Time and time again, we see this. The numerology of Jesus is 27, and the numerology of Christ equals 32. 27 times 32 is 864. And the diameter of the sun in miles is 864,000 miles, straight up. So, using the numerology that I got from the Bible, I looked at Jesus Christ and then found that this myth that's talking about the sun, this directly talking about the sun, is 864. And so this is the exact number. And there's this all this other stuff that you can do with the name of Jesus Christ. 27 plus 32 is 59. And there are 59 beads in a Christian rosary. And so not only do you have the diameter of the sun embedded in this name, you also have the number of beads in a Christian rosary. And then we can even break it down further. We can find the number 666. There's just a ton of different things we can do with this name. And really what it shows is that whoever created the Holy Bible, whoever crafted the name of Jesus Christ, it masterfully and artfully encoded these key canonical numbers that help us map the cosmos, essentially, help us map bodies like the sun. And so this is, you know, and all of this is embedded in a name. And so this is, and this is what I think this, I'm absolutely convinced at this point, is why the Holy Bible was written, was to pass on this information. And this is hard, metrological, scientific, astronomical information that's embedded in a single name. And that what's important about this is that anybody can do this. You don't even have to believe me. In fact, please don't believe me. Question what I'm saying and then go check this out. Do you speak English? Do you have a calculator? Can you count to 10? Well, then you have all the means necessary to do this. You know, this, I don't do any, like, hardly any algebraic equations. I really don't do any, you know, it's basically add, subtract, multiply, and divide, and you can get these numbers. And this is what's important. So this is not this advanced mathematics that's over everybody's head. So I know that's a lot of information, but yeah, that's basically, you know, basically the cipher. What's also important is that there's a rich historical context for this cipher as well, because it's not just using the Freemason symbol to decode this. You can actually use dice, the chromatic music scale, as well to decode this. So multiple ways of finding the numbers to the letters.
What about like coins, I Ching, that kind of thing? Is it the same kind of ball of wax?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I took this cipher to chess, the game of chess. And so basically I put the numbers to the characters of chess, like pawn, knight, bishop, etc. And I have a video on this. You can check out just chess, Pi the Great Work, or Pi in the English Alphabet on YouTube. And basically what chess encodes is a lunar, a solar, and precessional calendar within the pieces of chess. And this is straight up, the exact numbers. Not only that, but it also encodes pi in multiple ways, and, you know, looking at the numbers. So just for instance, pawn in this cipher is P-A-W-N is 3141, straight up. This is the numbers of pi, the ratio of a circle circumference to its diameter, abbreviated 3.141 usually. And so, you know, not only you have multiple ways of encoding pi, and so this is just chess. So, and then I did like the Great Cross at Henday. I did dice, you know, I went to the solar system. And it seems to work on everything. I mean, I haven't found one thing that it doesn't work at, that you can get an extremely important number, you know. And this is the problem is you have to be numerically literate to understand these key numbers. You know, like if I told you 2160, that probably wouldn't mean anything to you. But if I said that to a guy like Randall Carlson or Scott Onstott, they could write me 8 pages about the number 2160 and all the important ways and the places that we see this. And that's all I would have to say to them. And so there's direct communication, meaning within the number itself. And so, and this is what...
Huge encoding. Which would lead me to believe there's huge encoding within it, which would lead me to believe that the creators of chess and the creators of the Bible knew these things very, very intricately. Who created the game of chess?
That's, you know, that's the crazy thing about all this is that, like, all the stuff that I looked into, we have no idea where it came from. Chess comes from a game called Shantaraj in India. And once again, it's probably survived prehistory. Looked into dice, same thing. You know, the Holy Bible, we don't know who wrote it or where it came from, you know, we don't, you know, et cetera. Was Jesus a real guy? There's really so much of the stuff that I look into, we don't know where it's come from. So this means that this information is extremely old. You know, I looked into an example, I looked into dice, and you can actually find the number of bones in the human body within the numerology of dice, straight up. It gives you the exact number. And so that being a coincidence is just, you know, it's absurd, really, if you think about it. But what's important is that this game is old. It's prehistory. It's a key factor in the Hindu epic, the Mahabharata. And I think the oldest set of dice was found like 5,000 years, you know, I mean, 5,000 years ago. So this has been around a long time. And so really what it says is our ancient ancestors were extremely intelligent. Extremely intelligent, more so than we can even comprehend. But what's even more important is that they left their wisdom for us encoded in these things. Chess, dice, Holy Bible, etc., etc. And so, and this is stuff that we can go in today and rediscover all of this. And this is what I'm trying to do. So
Mm-hmm. Well, in terms of the meanings, what I've found with high-level mathematics, scientific fields and things like that, once you fully understand the formulas or the methodologies of what you're looking at, you will actually be able to then create things from it, right? Like, say somebody knows a certain numbers of encoding and blah, 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 and then boom, he creates alternating current or something like that, like Tesla or whatever, you know. Is it possible to create things that are in the physical realm based upon these numerological principles like inventions, energy, etc.?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. You know, I mean, I think you had Randy Powell on, right? Yeah, that was the show, right? You had Randy Powell on? Yeah, really what, you know, he's working with Marco Roden's math, and basically what Marco Roden's math, and he's a huge influence on me, Marco Roden, and Randy Powell as well, too. But really what they're focusing on is being able to create free energy using numbers, basically using this language of nature in itself. And they actually focus on the numbers 369 in, you know, in Marco Roden's math. And even Tesla himself said, if you only knew the power of 369. And so it's obviously that, yeah, I mean, I think that there's so much more. I mean, I can't say this invariably, but we don't know how they built things like the Great Pyramid of Giza and stuff like that. It's just, that's an engineering nightmare. We have no idea how they did it. But what I am saying, though, and what my belief is that the information in order to do stuff like this is actually encoded in some of these books and in these archaeological sites and in these games, in these nursery rhymes. All of this stuff is actually encoded in this. And we're in the position right now to be able to go in and actually relearn all of this stuff. But really what it does, it takes an open mind and the recognition of realizing that our ancient ancestors were more intelligent than us, just straight up. And now I'm absolutely convinced of that. So
have there been any cases, because this is another element that I'm wondering about this. If you understand these principles, if you know the power of these numbers, is it possible to use that power and that influence of these numbers and what their meanings are to influence and or control slash brainwash people who are unaware of them? Can there be an effect if I encoded a couple of sentences or something of that nature and all the numerical encodings of what I'm talking about stand for like evil, scumbaggery, douchebaggery, stupidity, etc.? Would somebody become just a little bit more of a scumbag and perhaps less intelligent after reading that sentence or whatever in a very minute yet scientifically measurable way?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, we don't, you know, most people are not mathematically literate or symbolically literate either. And so we're actually accosted with this stuff all the time. We are bombarded with it. You know, I don't know if you know that, you know, the guy that wrote The Fight Club, Chuck Palahniuk, I think it is. He wrote a book called Lullaby or Lullabies. And he puts in their book, he said, Big Brother isn't going to be hiding behind the scenes, you know, making, you know, it's going to be screaming at you from all corners. You're going to have, you know what I mean? And there's going to be cameras on you. It's going to be blasted at you. It's, you know, it's media. It's this, it's this. And we are bombarded by this stuff all the time, all the time. And we just don't know it because we are not trained to see it. And so, and it's truly remarkable how many things you can answer with the power of number. It really is. And this is what these ancient cultures were actually trying to pass on to us is how important this stuff was in the archaeology and stuff like that. So, as far as the question is there an elite group of people out there right now that know this body of information, that were custodians of it, but have kept it for themselves? In my opinion, absolutely. Absolutely. And this is what we're actually talking about when we talk about the elite. We talk about the Illuminati. You know, I make the case that basically what I'm dealing with is called gematria or numerology. Most people know it as Jewish Kabbalah. When, you know, Kabbalah, what word is Kabbal? So when you talk about a global cabal, you are talking about global Kabbalism. You're talking about a group of people that know this information, that are doing everything in their power to make sure that you don't look into it. And so then I go and I ask people all around the world, what do you think about math? Ugh. You know, they want nothing to do with it. And then you wonder why.
Yeah, that's a very interesting point. You know, I think we're really saturated by this, isn't it? You ever been in a shower and you think to yourself, man, how could I possibly get any more wet? I'm already getting it trickled down on me all the thing. And the answer is you really can't get any more wet because you're already soaked in it. And the fact that you would even question it or whatever is kind of like a representation of how you don't know how drenched in the stuff you already are. And that's kind of like a metaphor for the kind of things and brainwashing mechanisms that we're already swimming in. We'll be right back after the break with Marty Leeds.
Gonna make love. You know how I know? Because it's Wednesday, and Wednesday night is the night that we usually make love. It's because it's when everything is just right. There's nothing good on TV. You haven't had your social netball team practice, so you're not too tired. Oh yeah, sounds like it's all on. You say something to me like, I might go to bed, I've got work in the morning. But I know what you mean. You mean, oh yeah, it's business time. It's business time.
It's business. It's business time.
That's what you mean. You mean it's business time. Oh.
It's business. It's business time.
Oh yeah.
Oh,
welcome
yeah.
back.
That's right.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the sexiest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week, 2 hours a day. I really wish I had 3 hours a day because 2 hours is just not enough time to discuss and talk about scumbaggery. It's just not. My very special guest is Marty Leeds talking about numerical Kabbalah, i.e. Cabal scumbaggery. Welcome back.
Where do we go from here?
Because the subject matter, I will admit here on radio that I'm, as you mentioned earlier, one of those people who's numerically illiterate, and in so doing, in an incapable position to ask appropriate questions based upon the subject matter and the specifics and things like that. I would think it might be better to actually have, say, a panel discussion with a couple of you guys. Like you mentioned a few fellas there before, like Randy Powell, and I believe I had somebody else on the show a week or two ago talking about this too, to come on and have sort of like a panel discussion. Because I find if you've got a couple of people who understand what's going on, all having a general free-flow conversation, then sort of everybody else who's listening gets lifted up as a direct result. Whereas if we've got somebody who knows the numerical values and things of that nature, such as yourself, with explicit detail, talking to somebody like me who's virtually illiterate in that particular context, I think there's a couple of things that might be missed out on, if not the whole point.
When I started doing this, like I basically just started teaching this because I felt it was so important. When I started learning this, I was like, why is this stuff not taught? People go through their lives and they make decisions and they get opinions and they form belief systems, and they're doing this without a full education. And math is so important. This is what I'm trying to do, is really try to educate people. And I've gotten a really, really great response from it. I like to make the point that I'm not the most intelligent guy in the world. I never thought I'd be teaching this and stuff like that. So I'm learning this as I'm going as well. And I make mistakes and, you know, I screw up and that sort of thing. So, this is a whole process that I'm putting out there and allowing people to kind of go with me if they want, and try to learn this stuff. And I just can't stress how important it is. Pythagoras said that all is number. And when you realize that all is really number, like all is number, because even the words that we're speaking right now have a mathematical base. So numbers are being transmitted right now, not only through the internet in and of itself, which is completely numerically based. It's based on zero and one. And not only that, but the words we're speaking are numbers as well. So it becomes very important that we learn those. We learn this foundation, and so that's what I'm trying to do. That's my general thrust anyway. So
Well, it's like learning how to structure sentences with grammar, correct spelling, etc. And there's simply another section of that instead of just positions of, say, full stops, commas, question marks, exclamation marks, as well as capital letters, consonants, vowels, etc. There's the structure of language there, and we were led to believe that that's all the structure of language that exists. And basically what we're saying here is that there's another structure beneath that structure that has been completely forgotten about and has been kept from people. But why is it being kept?
Well, because it basically aligns you with, as far as I'm concerned, aligns you with the universe in and of itself. And when you say hidden, that basically there's another structure or a foundation for the the English alphabet. That mathematics is actually the occult nature of our English alphabet. So the English alphabet is actually constructed very mystically, very magically. And how many people know this? Hardly anyone. You know, and yet we use this language all the time, you know. And so therefore, if we, you know, if this cipher is correct, which I'm extremely confident it is, I mean, I basically spent the last year and change taking this thing on a world tour and looking at all the different ways we can look at it. And right now it's to the point, and I don't want to sound overconfident or anything, but it's to the point that if somebody wants to kind of tear this down or criticize it, it's the burden is on them to disprove it, you know. And you know, when you get into this and you really start looking at it, it's truly remarkable all the connections you can make, and it really starts to make a lot of sense of our history. And this is the important thing, because when we look back at history, it's you know, we can't make any sense of it whatsoever. And then the historical timeline that basically modernity is creating, I think, is completely wrong. I think it's just, you know, this linear time frame is just, I mean, everything is cyclical. And so this is something we need to readdress. And the way we can readdress this is through number and geometry.
Okay. Well, exactly.
Am I making sense?
Not really. What exactly are you trying to address here? You know, like, what? This is something I said the last time somebody was coming on and talking about these number sequences. What is the point? Okay, like, what is it we're going to be capable of doing if we were to all understand this thing? And more to the point, what are we not capable of doing, provided we don't know what these things are and dismiss them of other things? I mean, does it have some kind of real, profound, measurable change in somebody's life, consciousness, health, etc., by knowing these numbers? Have you become smarter, fitter, or stronger, or more sexually active, or something like that, since knowing these numerical Kabbalah languages? Have you been able to predict the future? Have you been able to toast bread at a faster rate, or something of that nature? You know, is there some kind of real physical representation that comes with knowing these things that you can actually change what we conceive to be reality into something more or something less as a result of knowing what these sequences are?
I think it's completely changed my consciousness, because and that's why I felt it's so important to really write these books. Let me give you a few examples and how now when I look at things, I don't look at them like I did before. Let's look at the number 7. We just talked about this whole thing is based on a system of 7. That's been a number that's been close to you your entire life. 7's always been a very holy number, right? 7 days of creation, 7 days of the week, 7 chakras, 7 visible notes or 7 notes of the major scale, et cetera, et cetera.
Snow White and the 7 dwarves.
Exactly. And so all of these numbers are encoded in there. Why is 7 important? What's so important about 7? Well, using this cipher, S-E-V-E-N is 65551. This equals 22. So now you're given two numbers, 22 and then the word 7. 22 divided by 7 is pi. And so the word 7 in and of itself encodes pi straight up. Anyone can do this. Put the numbers to the letters, get the value, divide it by the word, and that's, you get pi directly. And so now you actually have a context of why 7 is such an important number. Let's look at the word, let's look at dice here, since we talked about that earlier and I got this right in front of me. Dice, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. This is the size of a die. Whatever you put a die down, let's say we roll a die, we put it on and it lands up on 1. Well, the other side is 6, right? 1 plus 6 is 7. If you roll a 4, the other side is 3. So that means anytime you roll a die, it rests on that holy number 7. 3 and 4, 6 and 1, you know, or 2 and 5. Anytime you roll a die. Using this cipher, putting the numbers to the letters of the words 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 equals 103. So a pair of dice equals 206, and you have 206 bones in the human body. And so these things are called bones, and they were even made out of bones. And so you have to ask, why are these called roll your bones? Why were they made out of bone? And then now we find that using the numerology, and once again, you can do this at home. You don't even have to buy my book or anything. You can go check out the cipher, write this down yourself, and check it out online. This equals 206. What is the chances of that? And so now I look at dice, and I look at dice in a completely different way, because I know this is actually encoding. And actually, this is passing on.
But my point is, knowing that the dice always equal 7, regardless of what size they put on, and knowing that they equal the amount of bones in the human body, if you've got 2, doesn't somehow make you a better craps player?
No. Well, I mean, I guess it depends what you want to do with it, right? Yeah. I mean, if, you know, this isn't for you to be a better craps player, I guess, you know. What it's there to do, though, is actually focus on how important 7 is. Now, let's actually take another look at 7. Why is in, basically, we walked up to 6 in this cipher and rested on 7, right? And this is the motif that we see in the Holy Bible. God did his work in 6 days, rested on the 7th. Why 6 and 7? What's going on with that? Well, we just saw that we went 1 through 6 on the die. What's even more important is you have the 6 directions of space: forward, reverse, up, down, left, and right. And then you have the axis point. And the axis point is what? That's you. So the idea, mystically, when you read the story of creation in the Bible, it's talking about you. It's talking about the creation of you. The creation of the universe is you. It's the 6 directions that you in your life, and then you resting on that 7th. So God resting on the 7th is actually talking about yourself. And so now we see the word 7 is talking about the 3-dimensional mathematics of you, pi, and in dice, the number of bones in a human body. And so if you start to understand that and intuit that, you're never going to see 7 the same way again. And then you're going to see the historically why this is so important now. And so that's what, you know, it changes your consciousness. It's not like I'm a better guitar player now that I know, you know, numbers or anything like that. But I will say that I'm closer to me, if you will.
Are there by chance professions where these sorts of things do have a real value, like architecture, for instance?
Yeah, I mean, just look at the architecture that we have nowadays as opposed to, like, the Gothic cathedrals. The people that built the Gothic cathedrals, these were master alchemists, Gnostic Christians, whatever you want to say, whoever they were that built this. But they were masters, you know, and this was an enormous building project. You're talking about 100 years, 150 years or whatever where these things went up all over Europe, and they are just masterfully crafted buildings. Now, you look at people that were numerically literate and knew exactly how important number was in the grand schema of time, space, and what it has to do with you, how it relates to the human being, and look at the buildings they build, and look at the trash that we build nowadays, you know? And so that right there shows you the heightened consciousness of what these people, you know, who these people were and how much they actually knew, you know, so much so that...
Are there actually these encodings, like numerical values in the specific archways, like it's so many, it's 7 degrees of separation or something of that nature? Because this is what I'm talking about, real physical manifestations of the numbers that actually produce a real physical result. That's what I'm trying to get at here.
Yeah. I mean, have you ever been in like a Gothic cathedral? Like, it takes your breath away. I mean, when you walk in there, you're in a different space. And that's because what's the best way to say this? When you look at nature and you look at the head of a flower, right? And you're just like, oh, look at that. That's beautiful. Why is that beautiful? Because that flower grows from a perfect mathematical sequence. You know, it grows from the Fibonacci sequence. So therefore, we can correlate beauty to numbers, mathematics, directly. You know, and so this is what these Gnostic Christians, Freemasons, whoever they were that were building these Gothic cathedrals were encoding into the archways, the doorway, you know, the the steeples, the domes, all of that, you know. I mean, so many, for instance, we were talking about dice again, right? Dice, when you lay this out in two dimensions, actually creates a cross. So, and most of these buildings are built in this cross shape, you know what I mean? And then you have Jesus on the cross, and now you start to tie. Now, okay, the myth of Jesus, a Gothic cathedral, dice, and your relationship to these things. And how did we do that? We did it with number. That's how we did it. And so this is why it's so important. What's also important about this is the holy name of Jesus Christ actually encodes the geometry of this cube right here. And so that's yet another thing. So now we can tie the holy name of Jesus Christ into this as well. And so really it gives a whole new spin. It's a whole new look, new eyes at this ancient sacred geometrical, sacred numerical, you know, base of knowledge that's been basically, as far as I'm concerned, kept hidden.
You ever done a spirograph before?
So, no, what is that?
It's like, you know, you've got these little wheel thingies and they've got holes in them, and you put your pencil in the hole and the little wheel thingy goes inside an even bigger wheel, and then you just rotate it around and around and around, and it creates this really amazing kind of pattern, you know, like elliptical orbits and things like this all over the place. And it looks kind of like stars or shapes in really weird and wonderful ways, you know, spirograph. And I was just wondering if there was any real connection there between, say, the beauty of a spirograph and the numbers and sequencing and things like that that can actually be lifted from them and represented in architecture, flowers, or I don't know. I always thought Fibonacci was a kind of pizza or pasta, you know. Anyway, we'll be right back after the break with Marty Leeds from MartyLeeds33.com.
Well, there's only one thing I need to know. Whose side are you on?
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. That's an underground Russian dance music there. Well, we listen to it while we dance and drink vodka. My very special guest is Marty Leeds from MartyLeeds33.com. Welcome back.
How's it going?
Not as drunk as you. Now.
I'm not drunk, I swear.
I'm just messing with you, man.
I've got an image to maintain here, Vinny.
Yeah, so do I. Kind of like the Mona Lisa. It's an image that gets maintained, yet it cracks over time, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah.
Speaking of nothing you can do about it, there's a... What was I thinking just before the break? Yeah. Point of fact is, whether or not you believe in certain things, it doesn't mean that they don't exist, and it doesn't mean that other people won't act on those beliefs. You know what I'm saying? Like, we talked about the cabal and the Kabbalah. As I understand it, there's a number of dates in the calendar of which particular things will happen, or there's certain sequencing or whatever it is. Like the date 9/11, for instance, three things I could throw out. I think it was on the Titanic sunk on 9/11. The Twin Towers were turned into dust on 9/11. And I believe somebody did a star chart talking about how the stars were aligning at the birth of Jesus Christ, etc.
and he mapped back the star chart over time and said that his birthday was on 9/11. So there's these sequencing things that definitely go through. Even if people are unaware of them, you can still see big events and things with a lot of meaning happening on specific dates. And it occurs to me that some of these are very deliberate. Why?
Yeah. Well, you know, astrology has a lot to do with this. But, you know, let's just, because of lack of time, let's not go there. But let's just look at, I actually talked about this on another show, but the 9/11, let's just look at that for a second. What's up with that date? First off, you have 911, right? Just the emergency number in America, right? What's important about this is 9/11 didn't happen on 9/11. 9/11 happened on 7/11 because September means 7. Septa means 7. Octa means 8, and yet it's the 10th month. Nova means 9, and November, you know, etc. So our entire calendar system is basically 2 months off. And this is a really, like, rational thing that we should address. I mean, irrational thing, excuse me, that we need to address. Why in the world would the seventh month be called something other than 7? It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. So, you know, our entire calendar system is off. So when you try to base something off the Gregorian calendar, you have to understand that it's been completely destroyed, basically. Our reference of time is completely off. Septa means 7. So 9/11 happened on 7/11. 7/11 is the proportion of the Great Pyramid of Giza. Straight up, this is two very, very important numbers that correlate once again to squaring the circle. It's the exact same thing that's in our English alphabet.
See, and so I can tell right now, there's a bunch of people listening to this, like, listening to the real meaning of 7/11, who are taking a big double gulp right about now.
Yeah. So now when you were talking about, you know, basically being bombarded by this stuff, right? These symbols and numbers are all over. Okay, now you look at a convenience store or whatever it is of 7-Eleven. You're like, what does that have to do? That's ridiculous. It has nothing to do with ancient Egypt or canonical numbers. Actually, no, it has everything to do with it. Everything to do with it. You know, that's not an arbitrary name of a company, 7-Eleven. Let's actually look at a few companies here too as well. But 9/11, 7/11. This is the proportion of the Great Pyramid of Giza. These are two very, very key numbers. So now the capstone on the top of the Great Pyramid of Giza is missing, right? Missing capstone. Everyone questions why. Was it stolen? Did they purposely leave it off? That angle in its nearest whole number is at 76 degrees. So you know 76, right? Why is the 76 gas station called 76?
Oh.
Well, there's an exact reason why it's called 76. So when you say... And, you know, it's so funny. They used to have those 76 balls they used to put on the antennas on cars. I don't know if you ever saw those. I don't know if that was just a thing in America or not. But, yeah, I used to steal those when I was younger. I used to steal them off cars. And I had this huge bag of them. And it's all these years later that I actually ended up focusing
dude, look
on
it
up, 76.
Dude, look at all my 76 balls, man.
I know. I was an idiot kid, man. But so basically the point is... When you go and you're driving down the road and you see a 76 gas station, how many people pull in and have no idea, absolutely no idea whatsoever, the importance of that number? And yet that number is a key number in the art of squaring the circle. So this is the key number. So 9/11 didn't happen on 9/11. It happened on 7/11, straight up. And we really need to address this. And so, you know, I make the point too, is like, you know, you want to occupy Wall Street or occupy Oakland. You want to occupy something. Occupy the time. Take the time back. Because if you're on your own time, then that's it. And that's a rational argument you should be able to make with anyone. You're calling September the ninth month, yet September means 7. Does that make any sense to you? It doesn't make any sense to me. And so, you know, this is why it's so important to know key numbers. So even when you go into a gas station or a convenience store, those numbers are working. You know, they're playing on your conscience, and they're being symbolized particularly. And so once we said, you know, 7 encodes pi equals 22, and 22 divided by 7, the number 11 encodes 23. 23 is an extremely important number. It's the number of using the cipher heaven, occult, temple, beauty, chosen, natural, death. All of these things equal 23. So you have in the number 7/11, you have two extremely important numbers. And so all of this is occulted. hidden right there.
Didn't Jim Carrey do a movie called The Number 23 where he went nuts over it?
Yeah. Isn't that interesting? Yeah. When I came up with the cipher, I saw that and I was just like, so I ended up going and watching the movie again. And that movie is just imbued with tons of different symbols, you know? And especially when you start to get numerically literate, like we're talking about, and you go and look at these things again, this stuff will just start popping out at you everywhere, you know, in the movies, in the symbols that we're bombarded with, in, you know, the mythologies and the spiritualities, all of it, you know, you'll start to really notice this stuff. So yeah, that's just addressing 9/11, you know, and the dates, you know, and how important this stuff is. So,
Well, you know, what I was mentioning, and the reason why I went into this is that even if you or I don't believe in it, there are people who do and are willing to act on it. And I think this is what the most concrete thing that I've seen about the numbers is not so much in the fact that they're all tied in and they have all these undeniable links that are not coincidence. They're certainly there. They're very literal. They're very straightforward. They're squared, as it were. There's no possibility that you could deny that there's some connection there. But the point is, most people don't know about them. And because most people don't know about them, when somebody like the elite uses these sequences and things like that, you're totally oblivious to the agenda that they're putting in there that you would be aware of had you been numerically literate. So
yeah,
you could probably expose their agendas faster and easier if you just knew what you were looking at.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, I couldn't say it any better than that, you know. And so people that are talking about all of the conspiracy theories that are going around, if you realize that the people that are perpetrating all this stuff, that are actually these kind of like custodians of this knowledge, but have kept it for themselves, that are doing all this stuff, and you're not understanding it through the means in which they use to perpetrate these things against us, then you're not going to have a full understanding of what's going on, period. Because basically they know more than you. Just that's a fact. You know, and so basically all the conspiracy theorists in the world, I tell you what, you should be looking into number, you know, and I highly recommend checking out Scott Onstott's work. He's just done just a fantastic job of amassing all of these metrological and numerical correspondences all over the world, how basically, you know, a state building or capital building or something like that somewhere half across the globe will be directly connected through the number halfway across the globe to some, you know, spiritual palace or et cetera, some cathedral. And it's mind boggling, you know, especially when you're first getting into this, you're going to see that there's connectivity everywhere. And then the world seems like a mess. Well, why? Because you're not taught that connectivity. You're not taught how to see that. And so this is what's very important. You know?
Well, I think that the elite very much benefit from people not making sense of the world. If people cannot make sense of what's going on, how are they going to be sensible? You know?
Right. Yeah.
And in a world full of nonsensical people, hey, it's a hell of a lot easier to control them all if you're the only one that knows what's really going on, isn't it?
That's pretty much the bottom line right there.
Okay.
And how they can get away with it.
All right. Well, now I've grasped at least some of the importance of these topics. At least it'd be very, very foolish of me to say that I know a whole lot about it. You know, I've heard a lot about it, seen a lot about it, but I still, it's like you don't necessarily need to fully understand something in order to derive a very important lesson from it. And I think we have accomplished that here today. So thank you very much for your time, mate. And thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for listening. MartyLeeds33.com. We'll see you again sometime.